happy, healthy, high-performing teams. How do you create them? Research suggests this takes psychological safety, social connection, and autonomy. And as most people will spend more time with their team than with their family, this really matters. I want to share and learn more about the practices that helps teams be real with each other, connect, and do great work. I'm Helen Sanderson. My first podcast series was called A Cup of Teal, and it explored self-management practices and shared our learning from well-being teams. Well-being teams were self-managed teams inspired by Birdsong, supporting people to live well at home and be part of their community. Rated outstanding by CQC, most of the practices we talk about in this podcast were part of how well-being teams worked. I believe all teams can grow in psychological safety, deepen their connections to each other, and move towards greater autonomy. And this podcast is for any team leader or manager who wants to learn about the practices that can help, learning from colleagues and mentors and me. I'd love to connect. Please stay listening to the end and hear the different ways we can keep in touch. Lou and her colleague Steph have been part of our research about creating space for what matters, delivering roles and looking at psychological safety. So I'm really pleased to have an opportunity to chat to Lou about her experience. Lou, please, will you introduce yourself?
Yeah. Hi, Helen. My name's Lou Dash and I'm the Deputy CEO at Audie Warne Trust.
Thank you. From about September last year, 2024, up until very recently, I know that Michelle has been spending an hour and a half with you each month. So the first month looking at role-based confirmation practices, the second month looking at confirmation practices around psychological safety, and she's also done the same with your colleague, Steph. So can we talk about the role-based confirmation practices first of all? What was that like to do?
It was really interesting, actually. I think most of us have had experiences of job descriptions just being something that you look at when you apply for a job. And then once you've got the job, you don't really kind of refer back to it ever again. Mm-hmm. So to actually sit down and look at my role and what that actually means and how I should be showing up and what I should be spending time doing was actually a really interesting piece of work to see it in that presented in that way. And then to actually really think about how much of that I was actually doing as opposed to kind of getting caught up in other things.
Mm-hmm. It can be very eye-opening, isn't it? One of the people that we've been working with said, my job title is operational manager. When I looked at confirmation practices, the score I kept giving myself lowest score for was operations. So yes, for some people, it is a bit of a jaw-dropping moment to look at all the detail of their role, even though it's come from their job description. As you say, few people look back at their job description. So the process that Michelle will have used with you is inviting you to score yourself between 1 and 5 on each aspects of your role, and then coaching you for about 15 to 20 minutes using set questions with no creativity to help you get to a really specific goal. I know that you've got coaching experience, that you've done the fabulous Tough Training course. So what was it like for you to be on the other side of that?
Oh, well, it's always a challenge, isn't it? When your comfort zone is in one area to sit on the other side. But actually, mm-hmm. I really enjoyed it because it allowed me to sort of turn that thinking in on myself. And I think, again, we can spend a lot of time thinking about others, but not on ourselves. So to actually sort of almost give myself that workout of going, OK, so come on, how have you done this week? And kind of think about what that actually means and what's the impact of that was really interesting because you there's nowhere to hide with yourself.
Mm. I love how you describe that as a workout, Lou. I think that's a really great term for it. So at the end of 20 minutes, Michelle will use some coaching question. You will have reflected on your roles and ended up with a goal. Can you give us any examples of the kind of goals you were setting yourself?
They were things like working with teams and actually sponsoring some progression with teams. So getting stuck with something and then sitting down and saying, OK, so let me sponsor the work. I'm not here to do the work, but I will help you stay on track and make sure that you've got the resources that you need to get the work done rather than And I'm sure, anyone that's sort of done any coaching or any tough will know that what you don't do is sort of swoop in and go, it's okay, I'm going to fix it. So I didn't do the fixing. I just made the space and created the right environment for the fixing to get done.
Excellent. And then we took an hour and a half of your time working with you each month. The first half an hour would have been a check-in, a feelings check-in, looking at your roles using confirmation practices. And then Michelle would have asked you an open-ended question, something like, what else might be getting in the way of you doing your best work? And some people take that towards well-being. Some people take that towards something they want to learn. Some people want to test out or experiment with an idea. And some people want to problem solve. What kind of things did you and Michelle talk about then?
Oh God, I think I absolutely stretched Michelle's imagination there from going from one thing to the other. So it was really interesting. Again, it's been an interesting year for us as a trust, and my role's changed, and within that, I had to think about what that then meant in terms of my own practice. So one of the things for me, having worked at the trust for 8 years and be and directly line managing managers, was knowing what was going on and getting involved with things. And I very quickly realized that when Steph became the ops manager, that was her space. And so one of the things that was getting in the way of me taking on my new role was the fact that I kept dipping back into my old role.
That's a great insight.
And so I had to sort of have that conversation with Steph and say, you do need to tell me to back off. You do need to say to me that I've got this, Lou.
So that's interesting. Sometimes the actions that come out of things are renegotiating work with people or asking for what you need, sort of asking and requesting for somebody to give you a pushback when you are straying over the boundaries of what was now in your new role.
Yeah, and also for me to not go back into my comfort zone of the role I knew.
That's interesting because we talk quite a bit, don't we, about comfort, stretch, and panic. And staying in the trust in the stretch is where we learn most. So, would you say that working this way with confirmation practices, was it comfort, was it stretch, or was it panic?
I'd say it was stretch for me, actually, because there's nowhere to hide with yourself. So actually, you can sort of get to the end of the week and go, it's that whole thing. You can be busy, but you can be busy doing the wrong thing.
Yes.
And, I think we've all fallen into that trap a little bit occasionally, oh, it's a good busy. Well, what does that mean? And so sort of using confirmation practice to really think about, I'm a 50-year-old menopausal woman, Helen. So, I need as many boundaries as I can possibly give myself. And confirmation practice really helps me just sit down and go, right, what do I need to pay attention to?
Lovely. Am I busy doing the right things or just busy doing things? Really good reflection. And how does this compare with the one-to-ones that you receive from your line manager?
Oh, well, yes, it's interesting, isn't it? Because one of the things is around making sure that we don't just say other people have got to do this. So with my one-to-ones, yeah, we've been using the sort of I've been turning up with my confirmation practice and saying this is what's going on. Yes, we're still establishing a lot of my work in my new role. And like all organizations, what you're doing 1 week, they say a week in politics is a long time. Well, a week in social care is, what you think you're doing at the beginning of the week and at the end is two different things. But I again It reass I've got my appraisal next month, and I think it's really reassuring for me to know that actually I can sit with confidence and look at my job role and say I've been paying attention to that.
That's a great way of working with your line manager. If confirmation practices are not already embedded throughout the organization and you are starting to explore them, you doing your own confirmation practices and then sharing it with your manager so he or she knows what you're focusing on and is reassured that you've looked at the whole of your role. That sounds like a great thing to do.
Well, they've created this role and said this is what we need as an organisation. So again, it's that whole responsibility accountability thing, isn't it? So I'm responsible for making sure that I'm then delivering in my work, and if I'm not, it's for me to flag that and identify what's getting in the way.
Brilliant. And that's the adult to adult relationships that I know is the focus of tough training as well.
Absolutely, the two just work so well.
Completely. I completely agree. And we've been looking at one-to-ones that balance a focus on accountability, which is confirmation practices around your role, with belonging and your role as a leader creating psychological safety with your team. And if a team has got team agreements, we would look at confirmation practices around those. But with you, we looked at confirmation practices around psychological safety. What was that like, Lou?
Well, I think again, this is where probably Michelle and I had some really great conversations because I'm a massively interested in psychological safety, and sort of have sort of devoured Amy Edmondson's work and just thought, wow, this is, you know, some of the things you think and then you realize have completely turned on its head. So for me, psychological safety is absolutely where it begins. And we had a you know, great conversation around sort of the chicken and egg scenario, team agreements, psychological safety, how do, you know, which bit comes first. And so, yeah, thinking about psychological safety and in my practice as well, about how I show up, how I behave, the conversations I'm having with people, have I created that space? You know, are people feeling safe to show up and tell me what's really going on for them, or, you know, to flag when things haven't gone wrong? And that to me is crucial in social care because, you know, we're responsible and accountable for people's lives effectively, you know, basically to strip it all down. And as a result of that, you know, we need to be able to surface when things haven't worked and deal with that in a way that's constructive, but also from a learning perspective as well.
Yes, and that's the power of Amy Edmondson's research and work, it is the links to learning. And what the psychological safety confirmation practices that you were using, it asks you to say, well, how am I doing showing up with vulnerability? And how am I doing sharing my failures and what I've learned from them?
Yeah, absolutely. And I've, you know, as an organization, we've always worked on a basis that we have quite a flat structure. So some of this was quite, it wasn't a big leap. And I think in some respects, it was already happening in terms of people feeling able to speak with me or with anyone in a very open and candid way. But certainly, you know, thinking about, we've had some, you know, incidents that have happened this year, and I've reflected on my own role in that and whether there was anything else I could have done and shared that as well.
That's a great example of showing up with humility as a leader and creating a safer space for creating learning and creativity, as Amy's research says, because it starts with you being able to say, I would have done this differently if I had my time again, and this is what I've learned from it. That's really, really impressive.
Thank you.
So after that conversation, those confirmation practices, Michelle would have also asked you, you know, what else might be getting in the way of the team doing their best work? What else might they need? How might they want to or need to grow and develop? What was that conversation like?
I think some of that was again back down to sort of psychological safety, and what we're doing and making sure that we've got the right people in the right places as well. So we've done quite a lot of work as an organisation, sort of reviewing our structure and thinking about, you know, again, where are people based and what's their circle of influence within that as well. So it's been a really interesting year actually, and everything sort of aligned at the right time for us to kind of draw upon sort of the coaching that we've done as an organization in leadership roles, the changing the roles, the work with yourself and Michelle, excuse me, my voice. Yeah, so I think there's been something really crucial that's happened there in terms of us just really thinking about a lot of things differently.
And let's delve into that a bit more. So, what are your one-to-ones like now with the people who report to you? How do you support them to pay attention to delivering their role? How do you support them to reflect on how they're growing and supporting the team? And how do you pay attention to well-being as well?
So we do things in sort of a number of ways. So as you said at the beginning, Steph, who is one of my direct reports, has also been doing confirmation practice with Michelle. So we've had that opportunity to work through, I've had the opportunity to work through Steph's confirmation practice, which has been really interesting. And it's something that I will develop with my other direct reports as it evolves. What we do is try and have structures. So we meet as a group, an operational group, every week, and we do a check-in at the beginning of the week and a check-out at the end of the week, and that just helps us stay focused on what we're doing. That means that the one-to-one times can be times when people bring what they want to talk about rather than me having a checklist of things I want to talk about. It's their time, and often I will begin that process with, "What's on your mind? What would you like to talk about?" And it can be more of a coaching session for them. So, you know, that time is really valuable because we can go for a walk. We can go for a cup of tea, and it is just a bit of a human time rather than just a, right, I've got to get through this because our policy says I've got to meet with you every 6 weeks. I'm going to go through this checklist. You're going to say everything's fine. I'm going to sign it off, and we're all going to go, you know, go about our daily lives. So we use metrics. We've got KPIs. We're developing dashboards that give us information that we need rather than just information because it's information, and that allows meaningful time. I want to spend time with Steph and with Martin and Michelle, that actually they come away from going, that's really helped.
And again, that reflects the adult to adults of you know what you need, and sounds like it's got some elements of the second part of the sessions that you did with Michelle. You know, what will it take for you to keep doing your best work? You know, what's going on with your well-being that you might want to talk about? You know, your agenda and your time.
Yeah, we do things like in the top of our meetings, we just do a check-in quickly, where we just very quickly say, is there anything else that's going on that's going to get in the way of us paying attention today, or things that are happening that we need to kind of, be mindful of? We're going to keep our phones or checking our phones, just because it's those things that people will misread and
Yes.
go, oh, that person keeps checking their phone, or they're not really paying attention to me.
Good point. Really good point. And we shared the same thoughts about job descriptions being something transactional that happens when you take a role, but not usually or ever useful afterwards. But you're trying something different. Can you explain that?
Yes. So again, reflecting on my own job role, it occurred to me that, job descriptions are something that we spend an awful lot of time creating when we want to recruit someone into that role, and that person will look at that job role and presumably be attracted to the offer that's been made in that job description, and then they're never really used again. Only if there's a problem, there's a performance issue, they might get dusted off again. And I did some work a couple of years ago with Neil Eastwood, thinking about kind of what you put into a job description. So rather than it being War and Peace
Yes.
with every single thing that you could possibly think of, it was more of a description about what the work would be like, and more of an invitation to come. And through that, we then the confirmation practice then really helps us to then focus on what that person needs to be doing. So you don't have a job, start a job, and then 6 months later go, I'm not really doing that job now. I don't understand. So the job descriptions are a living document for us.
Fantastic. So you're taking job descriptions, keeping them live through confirmation practices and using them, presumably through induction and probation, and then on to one.
Yes, absolutely. They if that's the job you've applied for, then you need to be reassured that that's the job you're ultimately doing, and that's where the conversation should sit.
It's the perfect golden thread, isn't it? I applied
Yes,
for
it
this.
is.
I'm supported to deliver it. I pass probation because I'm delivering it well. And I get ongoing support through my one-to-ones to keep improving my performance. Thank you. Is there anything that you're planning to do differently as a result of the work that we've done together, or even changes that you've already started to make?
Yeah, I mean, as an organisation, like I said, the timing of this time with yourself and Michelle has been wonderful, because we undertook last year that we would evolve as an organisation and be more self-organising in terms of trying to embed within teams that adult-to-adult relationship, and thinking about how teams could grow, but not necessarily in a hierarchical sense. So it all aligns, as in, what do we need to do to give people the autonomy and the safety, the psychological safety, to do their work? How can they then show up and do that without having to pause and stop and seek permission from a manager? And how do we evolve into an organisation where we're not constantly dealing with disputes or misunderstanding or behaviours, so team agreements, to enable us to actually focus on what's important, which is actually delivering support?
Thank you. That was beautifully put, and I can't wait to see what you and your colleagues do next in the Trust. Thank you so much for joining me, Lou.
Thank you.